On the program today, we have several new and forthcoming books, including Concise Reform Dogmatics and Michael Horton's Christless Christianity. And Jeff Waddington discusses Living for God's Glory by Joel Beakey. All this and more ahead on the Reformed Media Review. Hello, everyone. This is a Reformed Media Review. I'm Camden Busey. I'm here along with Jeffrey C. Waddington, who's teacher of the congregation at Calvary Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Ringgoes, New Jersey. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. How are you, Camden?
Good. We've got lots of books to talk about today, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
But I need to also introduce our friend Jim Cassidy, who is the pastor at Calvary OPC in Ringgoes. How are you doing, Jim?
Well, Camden, thanks for having us on.
Oh, yeah. So we are excited. This is our first edition of the Reformed Media Review. We thought we would split this out, our book section, in order to provide more timely news on new books and new publications, new forms of media. So we've decided to split this out into its own show. So you're going to get this if you get the regular feed, if you get the master feed for the Reformed Forum. If not, you can subscribe to this individually, or if you don't want this, you can still subscribe to Christ the Center and handle things the way you want to handle them. So we're excited. We got a bunch of books today we're going to talk about. Jeff, what's up on what's on the docket?
Oh, well, in terms of my own comments today, I wanted to discuss the Joel Beakey's book, Living for God's Glory.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book coming out of Together for the Gospel from 2006, if I remember correctly.
Preaching these are new ones?
Yes, relatively new. And then Things That Cannot Be Shaken. Well, these are ones that I've actually already read.
Okay.
Were you thinking of things that are forthcoming?
Yeah, what's
okay. Oh, there's a lot. My goodness. We are, remember how we said it, a few months back we were in a dry phase?
Yeah.
That is over and done. If you're wanting to, if you were trying to buy every new book, you'd be like trying to drink water from fire hydrant. So, the list of things that are new out, that are already out there, Christless Christianity by Michael Horton.
We've had the link to that up on the website for a while. Right. I don't have a copy. You have one of those in front of you?
I'm waiting for my review copy, but I've looked, the church has had a few copies, and I browsed it, and it looks interesting.
Now, they've been over at White Horse Inn. They've been focusing the entire year on that subject, so if you're into the White Horse Inn, you certainly want to pick that book up. Or if you're not, it's still going to be a good read,
right.
I'm sure.
It's a definite must read. It is there is a DVD, I think, containing four lectures that are also available, and you can get that from the Christless Christianity website. There's a website devoted to the book. We have a couple
Jeff,
of in our yes.
Oh, I just
go ahead,
on Christless Christianity. Your opinion on what you browse through, because I had a chance to browse through it as well,
it's
well done. And my question was, do you see this as sort of a kind of book along the in the tradition of David Wells, kind of an expose of major weakness within major weaknesses, really, within the church, and a call to the church to once again regain its evangelical and reformed heritage?
Well, I can say this. I don't think there's anything that's going to be shocking for those who are already familiar with that kind of a book, like with Michael's work through the White Horse Inn. Or with the book, the several books that you've made kind of made reference to with regard to David Wells, his No Place for Truth, God in the Wasteland, Above All Earthly Powers, Losing Our Virtue, and The Courage to Be Protestant being the latest. These are all books that are searching evaluations of the evangelical movement in America, and so Mike Horton's book is going to be, I guess, in that genre, which is what you were asking. I think it's going to be a very good addition to that kind of book. So that, be on the lookout for that. And there is, like I said, there is a website. I think it's just called ChristlessChristianity.com or .org. Worth your while looking at. Michael is someone I have been reading for as many years as R.C. Sproul. And the truth is, I was reading Michael and I was reading R.C. back when I was a Wesleyan. It may have something to do with the reason why I'm now Reformed. Yeah. thinking of that, there is, and we've already mentioned it, the Short Life of Jonathan Edwards is now available by George Marsden. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That is, of course, that is not, no, I haven't read it completely yet. I do have a copy. I have not read it, so I can't confirm or deny. But the it says on the cover, these are from Marsden himself, that this is not a condensation of the life,
right.
The Jonathan Edwards of life. This is a totally new book. Obviously, it's the same topic, so there's going to be plenty of overlap. But you want to keep that in mind, that it's not a complete, just a condensation. The new material that will be in that book will be discussing a comparison contrast of Edwards with Benjamin Franklin. That material really is not in the original biography. So you'll still want to, if you're interested in Edwards and you already have the big biography, you'll probably still want to get this for its additional material. And
that's,
I think
that subject of Benjamin Franklin was the subject of at least one of his lectures down in Princeton. He gave the Stone Lectures this past year.
Right.
And that particular lecture was fascinating, especially because as he gave the lecture, he was standing right in front of Tsang Li of Princeton Seminary. And there was an interesting exchange with him afterwards. But that content alone, which is not in the biography, it would be worth, I think, the price of the book.
Right. Now, understand that it's not he's not the first person to bring those two figures into contact.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a common comparison contrast in days gone by. In fact, there's a volume from one of those volumes that's a compilation that comes out of a conference, a seminar that ties the two of them together. But it'll be interesting to see Marsden's take on that. Another volume that is definitely has been anticipated, and many have already started reading their copies, is Concise Reform Dogmatics.
I just unwrapped my copy. I went into the bookstore today, and good old Micah Bickford, our friend at the Westminster Bookstore, I walked in. He says, "So you're going to buy this?" And I said, "Actually, I did come in to buy this book, but you've certainly convinced me, because I wasn't sure if I was actually going to pull the trigger." Yeah. But they have a 40% off sale.
That's a good deal.
I'm going to try to get this this podcast out before the sale's over, but you might just miss it. But yeah, tell us about this, Jeff. We're really excited.
Well, from what I can tell, the Dutch original was published in the 90s, and this is by two Dutch professors, J. van Genderen or Genderen.
Yeah, not Gemmeren, Genderen.
Genderen. That's right. Yeah, not Willem.
Not
van
Willem Gemmeren. Van Gemmeren, J. Van
Testament
Genderen,
film. Right, and W. H. Velema, both from the Theological University of the Christian Reformed Churches in the Netherlands. Now, I believe Van Genderen has gone to be with the Lord, and it's only Velema who's still with us. But this is quite amazing as you look through it. It does have a format that's something like Barth's Church Dogmatics, and Jim will know what I mean when I say that.
Yes, it does.
It has large font or moderate-sized font, and then and the more technical discussions, theological discussions, are put in a smaller font, and then therefore it's easy for the reader who wants to skip over the more technical discussions to read the larger font and maintain the flow of argument. And it's very fascinating. The best way that I could describe it from what I've seen so far is that it's kind of like a Bavinck brought up to date, so that he's interacting with more recent, like Karl Barth, theology.
Oh, totally. Let me read you this. Micah pointed this out to me. This is interesting, and this is going to ring a bell with many of our listeners. This is on page 59. Just as Christ is both God and man, the Bible contains both divine and human elements. This seems like a parallel, but is not. The incarnation is an absolutely unique event. Our reception of God's revelation in human language is essentially different from adoption of human nature by the Son of God. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
That's just a foretaste there. Page 59,
timely.
Right off the bat in Holy Scripture.
There you go.
Yeah, so this is definitely something you're going to want to pick up. It's in many ways bound, like the Bavinck set. It is from PMR.
Yeah, it's very nicely done.
Oh,
very
yeah.
Nicely font, done.
The, right, the type setting's the same. Of course, not the font sizes, as Jeff mentioned, but this is a good one.
And it's 900 and some odd pages, and that's concise.
Right. Let me read you part of Frame's blurb. When a 900-page book has concise in its title, we expect a different perspective. Indeed, this book comes from the Netherlands, the land of Kuyper and Bavinck, where 3- and 4-volume theology texts are the rule.
That's right. So, I mean, but this well really said. Is. I believe Dr. Gaffin has spoken very highly of this volume. He has a blurb on the back of the cover.
Yes, he does.
But he has spoken very highly of the book, and of course he would be familiar with the Dutch original.
Clearly.
Now, this is the result of actually the integration of 2 English translations of the original Dutch, so it'll be interesting to see how it works out. It has the possibility of rivaling, if not replacing, Louis Burkhoff's single volume.
Yeah.
That's the assessment of some who have already read it. So you want to keep your eyes open for that volume. Another one that, Camden, you have already made notice of at the Feeding on Christ website is the new volume by G.K. Beale.
Oh,
The Erosion of Inerrancy in Evangelicalism. You've started reading it. I have my copy, and I read the intro, and it's clear that this is actually built around his exchange of articles or interchange of articles with Pete Enns. So it's be an interesting book to read.
Right. The first two chapters are slight revisions of the articles he wrote in Jets, correct?
That's correct. And Themelios.
Right. So if you're really familiar with those books, don't buy this one with the expectation that you're going to get something completely new.
No, but it's all in one place.
Exactly. Right? No, it's it's welcome. It's we're very interested to
but
have this.
But there is other material. There is other material.
Sure,
in here.
Sure. And he's included the Chicago Statement as an appendix.
Right.
He's included
right.
some other things back there. It's a great book. You definitely need to buy it. It's a good one to have and to read. But don't come into it with the total expectation that it's all new scholarship.
If you've
read Jets and you're going to get a lot of the same stuff. So,
and also. The chapter in the Gaffin Festschrift is similar, related to the book.
Resurrection and Eschatology.
Yes. Another volume that's hit the market is Daniel Kirk's The Unlocking Romans.
Tell us about that. What is that?
Well, I believe it's fair to say that Daniel, who is now was a professor at Biblical Seminary in Hatfield, Pennsylvania, is now a professor at Fuller Seminary out in California, that he is much more convinced of the new perspective on Paul than we would be. So this is a volume that's dealing with what he shows as the centrality of the resurrection in the book of Romans. He sees himself as building off of the, among others, of the work of Dick Gaffin, but I do believe that we will probably there'll be much that's appreciated that we can appreciate, but there'll be some things that we'll take exception to.
Hey Jeff, do you know if what relation, if any, this volume has to his PhD dissertation down at Duke?
It actually is a slightly revised edition of his dissertation.
Okay, very good.
So, but it is, like any book, it should have good stuff that we can benefit from as well as material that we may disagree with. But I'll come back, after having read it and give a more full evaluation. Let's see.
I wanted to mention I got a copy from the OPC office. I know not everybody out there is an OPC member, but
they're not?
No.
should be.
They're not.
They should be. That's right.
Well, given the size of our church, they're definitely not. But we're like my little dog. His name's Warfield. They call him he's like the Lion of Princeton, but he's a small dog with a big bark, and in many ways, the OPC is.
We're a small influential. Dog with a big bark.
Well, yeah, I think we've got some good content. And part of that good content here is this new book that I have, a handbook, a manual called Planting an Orthodox Presbyterian Church. This is an update of a book or some materials that have been available for a while. But Jim, did you want to explain what is new in this new edition?
What I understand is that it's simply bringing together a couple of publications that the OP had on church planning and cooperation with KMCHI. Now, KMCHI is our denominational committee on church planning, and Ross Graham is the general secretary of that committee, and he's the one that put together the vast majority, if not 100%, of all that material that is now bound together in one nice small volume. Has a nice cover on it, looks good, print is nice, easy to read type stuff. And if you want to have an insight into old school church planning, I really would recommend you pick this book up. If you have wanted to do church planning and are kind of tired of the new methodologies that are coming down the pike all time for church planning, these man-made strategies, and you want to go back to time-tested biblical principles for planting a solid biblical church, this is the type of manual you want to pick up. If you have a zeal for doing evangelism and extending God's kingdom through planting churches, this is a volume you definitely want to look at. You're not going to get any surprises in this book. You're not going to read it and you're going to go, wow, that is an ingenious method that has been invented. This is not that. It is faithful biblical principles for church planning. So in that sense, you're not going to find anything new. Yet maybe in its throwbackness, you'll find that it's actually new.
Definitely compared to the typical way of going about planning a church, this is a unique book. If I dare say so, the original form that I have read through two or three times now, found myself, you know, praising the Lord, not worshiping, although I might say in a very personal way, you know, glorifying the Lord when I read it, because I was thinking, my goodness, here is the way to plant a church. And you know,
it's a breath of fresh air, isn't it?
Yeah, we could go into details, but it's worth reading, even though you're not in the OP.
That's what I meant, in my analogy here. There's a lot of good books and many good resources from the OPC, and my analogy to my dog is meant to mean that we're a smaller church that has an influence larger than our size, I think. This is helpful to conservative reform people everywhere. So call up the OP and you can get this.
But absolutely. You know what? Warfield is a reformed dogmatic. Sorry.
We have an embarrassment of riches, I think, within our denomination.
Yeah, intellectually.
Yes, definitely.
And some embarrassments, too, but that's a whole other show.
Not so much the riches, is that what you're saying?
At least you said that's a whole other show and not this show.
That's a whole other show, that's right. Hey, I do have one other,
sure.
Actually a couple other throw in here, as I know
we're
winding down. But one of them, if I could practice a little self-promotion, although not really to promote myself, but... The 2008 edition of the Mid-America Journal of Theology has been released, and I got to tell you that this is a big volume. I do have an article in there on Torrance that they published, but despite that fact, this is a great edition of Mid-America Journal. It's what makes it so great is seriously not my article. What makes it great is that it's a commemorative issue on celebrating the life of Herman Bavinck.
Oh, sweet.
And so you have three articles leading off the journal on Bavinck. You have Mark Beach, who wrote his dissertation and published a volume on Turretin's view of the covenant. He has the lead article on Kuyper Bavinck and the conclusions of Utrecht 1905, which is a fantastic article. Covenant and Election by Venema, and John Bolt has an article on which is actually a bibliography of Bavinck's writings in English, which is a very helpful resource to have. Old articles that have been lost in time have now been sort of brought back to our fingertips through the work of John Bolt. And then there's an article of Herman Bavinck's itself translated by Klosterman on the Lord's Supper, and an article by Patrick Ramsey on Herman Witsius. And then a real nice, speaking of church planning, there's a section in this volume on church planning called the Church Planning Workshop. And there are three articles on church planning by Reformed old school guys that will give you a wonderful biblical and Reformed perspective on church planning. And then, of course, a whole host of book reviews. So this volume is this. If you don't subscribe to Mid-America Journal of Theology, shame on you. You should. This is a wonderful resource at our fingertips. It's only published
now, Jim,
once a year.
Yeah, I was going to ask you how frequently was that published? Once a year.
Yeah, once a year. Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen of it is top notch. The guys out in Dyer, Indiana, are doing a fine job.
Yes. Yes.
Keep it up, gentlemen.
Yep.
I would also want to point out the and by the way, Jim, excellent article on Torrance. I should mention the first of two volumes on Torrance's Christological lectures in Edinburgh has been issued by InterVarsity Press.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the benefit of being basically the transcript of lectures, which means they might be a bit more understandable than Dr. Torrance's rather opaque prose.
What do you mean?
He was hard to understand, okay? Sometimes. There are other times where he was beautifully clear. But anyways, seeing as Jim wrote has published an article on Torrance, I thought I would throw that in. The first volume is on the Incarnation, and the second volume will be on the Atonement. So you can be assured I will be keeping my eye on that one.
Yeah, just to make sure, people are clear that the article is critical of Torrance.
Yes.
And and his work on Christology, while interesting and provocative, is not what we would consider to be
orthodox
theology.
When I recommend the lectures on the Incarnation, it's with the understanding that you're reading something that you need to be very critical in your reading.
You need
to exercise your God-given discernment.
Mm-hmm.
Another volume that's just come out is the Cambridge Companion on Puritanism.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's familiar with the series knows that these companions are high caliber works. And if you want a good introduction to Puritanism in terms of the academic scene, this is the volume to get. It's co-edited by John Coffey and Paul Lim, and Jeff Jew has a chapter in there on millenarianism.
Yes.
Yeah, we're all surprised that he would write on that topic.
Who is Jeff Jew? Just so
Jeff Jew is a professor of church history at Westminster Seminary in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you can. We interviewed him on Christ the Center. If
That's
you
right,
want to get back to episode 31. You can go to reformedforum.org/ctc31. There's a really good discussion on the eschatological views of the Westminster Divines.
That's correct, and this will intersect. Now, he's not dealing just with the Westminster Divines. You'll be interested that John Coffey, by the way, one of the co-editors, has an excellent book on Samuel Rutherford that Carl Truman, I think, has recommended. In fact, I think they require it for comps preparation for PhD students. It's an excellent book
And so they recognize in the constellation of scholars who are interested in Puritanism, they recognize those scholars like ourselves who train at conservative reform seminaries. They actually have a classification in the book. So it's a really good volume, worth your while looking at. Let's see. Definitely we need to mention that Soo-Yoon Kim, Christ and Caesar, the Gospel in the Roman Empire and the Writings of Paul and Luke is now out. Look for that.
Mm-hmm. I think we mentioned that before.
We have, yes. Yeah. Also worth mentioning, seeing as Jim mentioned this with regard to the Mid-America Journal, is The Guide to the Writings of Herman Bavinck by Eric Bristley. It is now available and really is a must-have if you're going to be doing any serious reading of Bavinck. Now, let's see. Do we want to talk about Living for God's Glory at some length?
Yeah, let's get into it. We got a couple reviews. Those are our announcements and brief talks, but now we want to do...
Well, did we want to do some forthcoming books before we get into that review? Do we want to, because it might be worth doing that before we delve into the...
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
The forthcoming books, again, we are in the midst of we're coming into the Christmas season, right? So
publishers want to get everything out. Mm.
Yeah, so this shouldn't surprise us, what I'm talking about. There's the two new things that have come or are in the midst of coming from Banner of Truth, and that is John Calvin's sermons on the birth of our Lord called Songs of the Nativity.
Nice.
You want to be on the lookout for that.
Who is that from?
Banner. That's Banner of Truth.
Okay, I didn't hear. Yeah.
Then they have a two volume work on Scottish Puritans, select biographies, which may be worth a look at as well. Because we're probably more familiar with the English Puritans than we are with the Scotch Puritans, so it'd be worth delving into. Something that Carl Truman has already referenced over at Reformation 21 is the first volume of Doug Kelly's Systematic Theology. It's the first of three volumes, and it's a fairly substantial piece. Trying to remember how many pages it is. It's going to be fairly large, 640 pages, I believe, at the end of the day. That's definitely worth looking at. Let's see what else that we haven't already mentioned. Oh, the practice of confessional subscription will be... that'll be an interesting volume. It's a republication. It's not completely new. But that'll tie in well, as I think our good friend Lane Keister.
Yeah, I saw that over at Green Baggins.
Green Baggins. Mm-hmm. This will be a good tie-in with Scott Clark's book, Recovering the Reformed Confession.
Yeah, nice.
Another volume that's worth reading because it's a good overview is Peter Golding's Covenant Theology. That's a reprint.
Yeah, that's been out in another.
Yeah,
form.
It's not a new book completely, because I have it. That's how I can tell you. I can tell you it's going to be a good volume. Let's see what else we have. Anything worth? I think that. I'm sorry. I'm just scanning here. Did we mention already that Richard Gamble's Volume 1 of the Whole Counsel of God is actually not coming out in November? it's slated for July.
It's been on again, off again.
Several times.
Our poor brother.
I don't mean to laugh, but I'm laughing at our talking about it here and there.
Well, I can tell you it's going to be an excellent volume, because I've seen
absolutely
pre-publication proof of it. It's going to be very good. And that'll be three volumes as well. I think that you're going to have to hunt down. But Brian Lee's dissertation on Cocceius,
yes,
not Cocceius and not Cocceius, okay, Cocceius. That's in the same series with Venema's dissertation and with Mark Beach's dissertation, is due out in December. Okay. So Scott Clark, if you're listening, that's when it's coming out. It's coming out in December from Vandenhoek and Ruprecht in Germany. I don't know if there's anyone that will be carrying it in this country. If Westminster West is on the ball, they'll be carrying it.
Mid-America may carry it because carried the other series in their bookstore.
Right,
so
I understand.
You may get that one.
They may, except that they're not. He's not a professor at Mid-America.
True.
But anyways, Brian Lee, I think, is planting a church in the Washington, D.C. area. Isn't that correct?
He is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the URC.
That's
so
correct.
It should be very good. I've heard high remarks about it, those who've read it in its dissertation form.
He's a student of Richard Muller, of course.
That's correct.
And so you're going to get the 17th century through Mullerian eyes and not Bardian eyes or any others for that
so
matter.
It'll be nice. It'll be nice to read. So that's due out next month. So you will keep your eye. You can go on the web. You can actually order it directly from the publisher, Vandenhoek and Ruprecht. Out of Germany. But anyway, so that's we wanted to now talk about a few books in detail.
Yeah, what have you actually read? What do you have to mention?
Well, as you know, I actually have about 40 books that are my bedtime reading. actually more than that. Because I'm doing my dissertation on Edwards, most of my reading at the waking hours is on Edwards and related to him, but my bedtime reading is anything but Edwards. And so
Concise Reformed Dogmatics.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good leisurely evening reading.
Well, my wife would tell you that
the blue sleeping pill does that, which is set to replace, right?
All right. I'm completely weird. I know my reading habits are not normal. My daughter bought me a copy of the complete works of Sherlock Holmes, so
hey.
I will be reading that. And Dorothy Sayers, I got the stories of Peter Wimsey, is it Lord Peter Wimsey? So I will be reading those too. But I wanted to talk about Joel Bakey's Living for God's Glory.
Yeah, I saw that. I was at the CCEF conference this last weekend, picked up a copy. I didn't buy a copy, but I literally picked it up and looked through it. It looked really interesting.
And the now there will be actual full-blown reviews of this appearing in different places, like Reformation 21 or at the Reformed Forum and things like that. But this one is a very good introduction to Calvinism. It's published by Reformation Trust, which, as we all know, is the publishing arm of Ligonier Ministries. It is beautifully produced in terms of the quality. It's a hardback, nice dust jacket. I'm into desktop publishing, so I do look at the way a book looks and feels, and weirdly enough, even smells. this is a very good book.
Hints of apricot.
That is
a good nose.
There you go. It's primarily written by Dr. Bakey, who's out at the Puritan Reformed Seminary in Grand Rapids, but there are chapters that are also written by. For instance, James Greer, Michael Haken, Derek Thomas, Ray Lanning, Robert Oliver, Ray Penning, Nelson Klosterman, and Sinclair Ferguson. Those are some of those names we would be familiar with. Now, the book is all of, 416 pages. Okay, and it has scripture, name, and subject indices or indexes, either is appropriate. With a foreword by Michael Haken. Michael Haken is a patristics and Edwards scholar teaching at Southern Baptist Seminary.
Yeah, he used to be at Toronto.
That's correct. Right. He's, I believe, a good Canadian.
Well, you get some of that from up in Maine, right, Jeff?
They do, yeah. I lived in Maine for a short while, and I heard it frequently.
Mm.
The book is in six parts, really. It's got part one is Calvinism and history, which is a very nice. By the way, this is an I would say this is an excellent book to give to people who have no understanding of what the Reformed faith is, and for those who are Christian who are trying to figure out why it is that those of us who are theological immigrants, why it is that we're drawn to the Reformed faith.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Ignore it. That's my phone. I apologize.
Don't worry about it.
It's your fan base calling.
It's my fan base. Yeah, I think it's my daughter or my wife. Well, I just turned the phone off. We'll never know.
You're going to find out soon.
I will. That's right. So much for being professional.
Yeah, this is our loose podcast. We don't have to be all uptight on this one here.
So this one, you're saying that Christ the Center has gone into professional mode, right?
Well, I didn't say that either.
We're not exactly uptight either. Okay.
What I'm more or less saying is I'm not going to edit this one.
Okay, bummer. Okay, all right. So we heard that, folks. This is going to be is coming to you rough and unedited.
All right.
So six parts. The first part is Calvinism and history. Oh, this book I would be happy to give to anybody who wants to know why it is we're excited about being Reformed. Okay. Now there is one criticism I will offer at the end. Okay. But as far as the book itself, a good intro there. On the history of the Reformed faith, then Calvinism in the Mind, which deals with the tulip. Yes, you have to deal with tulip. Then there is Calvinism in the Heart, which is dealing with sanctification and spirituality. Calvinism in the Church, which deals with the reformation of worship and the regulative principle. And then Calvinism in Practice, which is applying the faith to family life, marriage, the work, the political arena, and ethics. And then the final section is Sinclair Ferguson brings it all together. The criticism that I have, and it's really only one, and that is that there is no Van Til is referenced in the book, but there is no inclusion of what I would call the redemptive historical school of thought. And that would have only made it stronger, considering that it is built around Puritan thought. Okay, I should have said that. The book is an introduction to Calvinism in more in its Puritan and Dutch second or further Reformation. And it's a good book. And so my only criticism is that it doesn't have any redemptive historical element, and which is surprising because Jonathan Edwards, John Owen and the like, they all, and covenant theology as a whole, is a precursor to what we would call full-blown biblical, theological, or redemptive historical concerns. It would have only strengthened the book. And if Dr. Bakey is listening, I would tell him that if there's a second edition, to include that material, it will only make it better, in my opinion.
Mm. And the title again, Living for God's
Living
Glory?
Living for God's Glory, Reformation Trust. Joel Bakey, excellent book, worth reading, and a book you can give to family and friends and your enemies because it's a demonstration that you love them.
Absolutely.
and hence, pour burning coals upon their head.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
Sounds good. I think that wraps us up for today. This has been a good talk, and we hope hope you learned something. Now get out there, shut that TV off, and go pick up a book. See you later.
Oh, totally like it.